today is Gary Short. Gary, how are you?
I'm great, Dave. Yeah.
Thanks yourself? For coming back to the show. Welcome back.
No problem.
It's been too long.
It's always fun chatting.
It is. Let's talk chat about data science because you're a data scientist.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, officially, I'm a data solution architect for Microsoft. But yeah, my interest and my training and what I've been doing, I guess, for the last 6 or 7 years is data science.
What kind of stuff do you do?
So, as I said, I'm a data solution architect for Microsoft. So what that means is I consult with Microsoft's customers, and I'm responsible for everything to do with ingestion, storage, and advanced analytics of data on the Azure platform.
Give me an example.
So let's say you've got a bunch of customer records, for example, customer contact records, so CRM database, and you say... Basically, the life cycle of a customer looks like this, and you can define that in data. So one of the things that we can do is we can uplift all that data from your on-prem systems, drop it into Azure, and we can start to run machine learning on that to kind of say, well, if a customer is going to leave you, this is the kind of things that they will do before they leave. So what we can actually start to do is to predict via customer behavior the kind of things that they're going to do before they then leave you. And that allows you to put in all kinds of marketing intervention. So you can then run that model against all of your current customer contacts, and the machine learning model can then classify those things into, you know, high risk or whatever. And then for each of the classifications you've got, you can have a marketing intervention to say, well, look, we can intervene now, and then maybe we won't lose that customer. So that's the kind of thing.
I like that. That's provides a real-world example of how you can use data. Data itself is just pieces of information, but once you
actually use it, then it becomes real. Absolutely. And if
it
was maybe like a 50 or a couple of hundred, then you know a human can look at that and see the pattern. But you know, when you're talking about terabytes of data, then you know
that's when you need tools like machine learning.
That's when you need tools like machine learning to help you spot those patterns.
You were telling me about chickens the other day. Data and chickens, which are words they don't often use together.
Absolutely. So this is for a particular customer, and what they do is they're a chicken farmer.
Okay.
And up until very recently, I didn't really know much about chicken farming. The problem of the customer. Awesome. So the problem the customer comes to me with is when I get an order for chickens, I don't know exactly how many chickens I've got, so I tend to oversupply. So really, what would be a big help in the kind of overall solution to this problem that I've got is if I knew how many chickens I had. And I was like, how can you possibly not know? You're a chicken farmer.
How can you possibly not know?
And he said, well, when you think about it, you know, I buy eggs at the start of the season. I buy eggs by the ton.
Okay.
So for a kickoff, I don't know how many eggs I've got. He said, and then some of them will hatch and some of them won't. So, you know, I'll have a subset of the eggs that I've bought will then turn into chickens. You know, and they are in these free-range sheds. You know, he says, so how am I supposed to know how many they've got? You know, there were tons of eggs.
You can walk around and try and count them, but they move very fast.
But they move very fast. You know, so what are you going to do kind of thing? And he said it would be great. It would really help us a lot if we could actually know exactly how many chickens we had in each set. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the problem. So like you say, it's very difficult, you know, to have a bunch of people run around a chicken shed counting chickens. Because, like they say, they won't stand still to be counted. You know, and as I said, somebody asked me, well, oh my God, you know, how do you count chickens? You know, I told them I count the legs and then divide by two.
I don't do that.
That's not right. So how we do that? We do that algorithmically in a number of steps.
Okay.
So really the first step is we have a number of fixed cameras in the roof of this chicken shed. And it looks down and it takes, once you stitch them all together, you get an image of the entire floor of this chicken shed.
Right? Okay.
So by definition then, all of the chickens are in that image. And then what we do is, you know, chickens are roughly all one particular color. I mean, there are party colored. So some of them will be like mostly red and have a little bit of white. Some will be mostly red and a little bit of brown and a little bit of white. But they are mostly one main color.
Okay.
And the ground that they are on is mostly one color as well.
Okay.
So what that allows us to do is it allows us to create a function which creates a linear separation between the color that is the ground and the color that is chickens. Okay. Now once we've created that, we open up the image and we go pixel by pixel and we say, because we're only interested in chickens, we're not interested in the background.
Right.
So what we do is we say, We've created a linear separation, which represents a threshold. So we say to each pixel, what is your intensity? Has the intensity reached the threshold that we're looking for you to be chicken? And if the answer to that question is no, then we turn that pixel black. If the answer to that question is true, or yes, I have, then we color that pixel white. So by the time we finish that first stage, what we have is basically a black image with a lot of white specks on it.
Okay, that's a lot easier to analyze than
okay, so now
reddish brown versus brown dirt.
Correct. Is it reddish brown? Is it this? Is it whatever? Okay, so now we've got just black and white. And what we have, as I said, is mainly a black image with a bunch of white specks on it in clumps. So what we then do is we use the k-nearest neighbor algorithm to cluster all of those points into all those individual points into actual clusters. And the trouble with that is the k in k-nearest neighbor.
Actually, can you define the k-nearest neighbor algorithm?
Sure. So so nearest is it's basically it works in a bunch of ways, but in general, you want to know something. Okay, so in this particular case, we're looking at I want to know Euclidean distance. Okay, but it works for a bunch of stuff. A thing that you want to know.
Okay,
and what you do is you ask the nearest neighbor to the point that you don't know. So you have a point that you don't know, and you have a point that you do know, and so you ask the nearest neighbors of the points that you do know, is this point near you? Should this point be in your cluster, or should it be in your cluster? And each of the nearest neighbors gets a vote. And the cluster with the highest vote score, then that point then joins them. And you can ask, you can use k-nearest neighbor for to solve a bunch of problems. In this case, we're looking at Euclidean distance.
Okay.
So what we say is, here is a point that I don't know. There's a whole bunch of points around about it that I do know. Okay, so I have a threshold distance which you basically then becomes a radius, and you can create a circle with that radius, and then all of the points inside that circle become nearest neighbors, and we're going to ask them all. Okay? But we're not going to make all of the votes equal. We're going to have a linear function, which basically means the nearer you are to that point, the more your vote counts.
Okay?
So let's say you didn't know me, so let's say you were sat there and there was three other people sat to your left.
Okay.
Okay. And if the algorithm was to say to you, hey, Dave, should Gary be in your cluster? You get a vote. And those people get a vote as well, right? But the further away they go, the less their vote counts. So that, because clearly I'm closer to you than I am to them. Okay. All right. So your vote counts for more. And then it's just a sum of all the nearest neighbors that you've got, and the one with the highest wins. Okay. And the k in k nearest neighbor is the number of clusters that you've got in this case. You know, the number of things that you want each point sorted into.
Okay.
Now, the trouble with that is there's two ways to specify what that k is. You can specify it up front. You can say, I want this algorithm to cluster all of the points in this image into four clusters. Okay, so you're going to be nearest one of those four clusters. Let's go for it. Okay. But we can't do that in this case because it turns out that actually the clusters are going to turn out to be chickens, and chickens the thing we're trying to count. So we don't know how many k's we've got in the first place. So what we have to do is we have to use the second method, and that is to create a heuristic which allows us to kind of specify the k's as we're going. So the heuristic for this particular example is fairly straightforward. You take the first point, and that's got to be the point of the first cluster. So you don't have any work to do there. You go point number one, your cluster number one, done. Then you pick up point number two, and you say, are there any points within the threshold distance from this that I'm interested in? And if there isn't, then that becomes the second cluster. And if there is, if it's close enough within the threshold to that one, you say, well, okay, you get to vote, and obviously, you know, it's going to vote that yes, it is near enough to me, so that goes in that cluster. Okay, and then you keep doing the exact same thing. You know, if the new point isn't within the threshold distance for any of the other clusters, it becomes the first point in a new cluster. If it is within the threshold distance for only one cluster, it joins that cluster. If it's within the threshold distance for two or more clusters, then we ask all of the points which are close enough in those clusters to vote. Bear in mind we get that linear function which increases or decreases the value of a vote, and the cluster with the highest vote, that point joins them. All right? So the time we've done all of that, What we've noticed, we know the number of clusters that we've got.
All right.
Okay. And then all we do is we count the number of clusters, and that number of clusters is the number of chickens you have in your shed.
It sounds pretty simple.
It is pretty simple. To be honest, it is, when you break it down, step by step by step, each step is pretty straightforward.
What are the tools you're using to do this?
You could probably do it in a bunch of ways, right? Because of the tool set that the customer is using right now, this is just written in C Sharp.
It's just a program. You're not using Azure or ML Studio or anything like that?
No, we don't need to, because the actual... So this customer is a customer of ours. He has these things used. He has other data in Azure. Okay? These photographs are all going to be taken and uploaded to Azure and then stitched together. So we are using Azure. The thing that's going to run this algorithm is going to sit as a VM in Azure. So it's not true to say we're not using Azure. We absolutely are, but we're not using any of the platforms.
We're not using machine learning tools.
We're not using any of those platforms, right? It's purely the IaaS stuff we're using and not the PaaS stuff.
Excellent. I think that's a good starting point. That's a great story. I love the practical application of data science.
I love it too.
You have an online presence, right?
I do. Yep. You can follow me on Twitter at Gary Short, or you can follow me on my blog, which is duncoden.it.
And where are you going to speak next after you leave Codemesh?
So actually, it's not part of my job anymore. Working for Microsoft.
I'm just so used to you evangelizing.
I know, because I used to be an evangelist. So it's not really part of my job anymore. I mean, I like Codemesh.
Yeah.
And so I make the effort to come here every year, but it's not part of my job. Right now I don't have any plans to speak at other conferences. Although all of my customers are down in London, strangely enough. Wow. So I'm in London a lot. So
and you're up in Dundee, Scotland.
Exactly. So that's where I live. But I'm in London a lot. So what I'm going to try to do this year is to kind of reach out to data science-y type user groups in London that I can visit in the evening. So I can kind of keep up this skill, you know, because speaking at conferences and stuff like that is a perishable skill. So if you don't keep it up, you're gonna forget.
And I will say that I've seen you speak, and you're excellent at it.
Well, thank you very much. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to reach out to user groups in London this year, and then hopefully, whilst I'm there in London doing my job anyway, then I can hang out with a bunch of guys and you know, speak at their user groups and generally just hang out with a bunch of data science geeks, which is always fun.
Excellent. Thank you, Gary.
All right. Thanks a lot for inviting me, Dave.
You bet.
So what makes my life better is technology and friends.